I'm Rob.
I'm E.
I'm Andrew.
I'm Jesse the Tree.
This is every day, 5 to 9, summer through the winter, though. This ain't no beginner shit, it's sinners on a sinking boat. I'm gonna roll, got a patch every hole. I still wrestle with my wrongs every night like dusty rolls. Dusty drum breaks and crispy ass flows. I usher them into the gallows with dry bows. Treat it like some breaded chicken, dump them in the oil bath. Hard boiled eggs, devil dub like some spoiled breath.
So give me that. And one of those two, this the whole truth, cold brew of old wounds, throwing stones at the gold moon, singing I'll be home soon and disappearing in the smoke fumes, so weary but the spirit is tuned, the pants hearing something serious, the chef in the booth, creme fraiche in the vegetable soup, from the nebula, no regular dudes, past pleasantries, the record
so
is
please
proof.
Tell me what's the word, the red doing the first, I keep on blue in the face while Jew on the earth, they can't deny me, try me, when I ride by in that ship box, high as the sky, waving and smiling. Pack a punch, I ain't talking about Capri Suns. In a brown bag, but this boxing gloves a free lunch. All my Dewey cocks cut you in half. Ain't no Texas Instruments, you ain't doing the math.
AKA Sleeping Dogs, right? Andrew, Jesse the Tree. Thank you guys for joining us. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having us.
Ian and I have been talking a lot about Sleeping Dogs and about the album. Faking my own death just to get some rest. We're excited to talk about it tonight. Looking forward to the conversation. To start, I'm curious about how the two of you ended up like getting together, teaming up for this. Can you tell us a little bit about how that happened?
It was through Twitter, really. I had heard The Rain Knows What It's Doing from Andrew, and I loved it. I loved the production. I loved the way he wrote. I loved how melodic he is. And it was just, you know, really right up my alley, and I just reached out and was like, this is really tight. That was it, and that was all I was gonna say. And then we just talked further. We have a lot of music, like in hip-hop and outside of hip-hop, that we have in common that we both really love, and just a lot of other interests in common too. And we started with like, let's make one song, and then we were like, all right, let's just make an album. And that was the blossoming of it. And so it was mostly through Twitter at first, and we were, you know, talking on the phone, and then Andrew came up to Celtics Country up here. And that was it. We recorded together for over a couple of days, got everything done, and then that was it. And we just played a show together pretty recently with Shrapnel and Zilla.
Brian Reynolds and
Nice. Yeah, up
Yo,
here.
Because of his Twitter handle, I always say like Xfinity Knives because he I know it's not that, but just right. Because it just like sticks in my head because it's funny.
Right.
But yeah, it was really like what Jesse said. We just kind of linked, like having like a couple mutual, like knowing a couple mutual people, because I used to live in Boston for like 5 years. I like went to school there, and then I stayed around for a little bit before I moved back to Philly. But yeah, so he hit me up, and it was just one of those things where like kind of like immediately, like once we started talking, it was just like super easy. There was like, it's a very organic feeling. There was like no force to it. And then it was like, yeah, I feel like we could make something cool together. And, you know, I'd listen to Jesse's music because I had people, like friends of mine being like, oh yeah, you need to check out this dude. So I knew of Jesse already. And then, but yeah, once we started talking, it just kind of like, it felt like it made sense just because we got along so easy. I knew it would be just like kind of like a very organic, like good kind of team up just to even just to create. And then we've made a few songs and immediately was like, oh, this is cool. And then, yeah, kind of turned into an album pretty quick. Was not much time in between when we first started talking to when we had recorded the entire thing.
Sounds like a mutual respect that turned into a pretty smooth creative process.
Definitely. Yes. It was really easy, honestly. Like, that's the thing about the album. I feel like it came out really good, and we definitely worked hard, you know, collectively to like present something that we're both really proud of. But I can honestly say, like, making the album was like really, really easy. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like I wasn't like, all right, we really need to like try to do this certain thing or whatever. You know, it's not like we had some kind of crazy goal. It was kind of just how it came out. But yeah. it was a really easy process, just because I feel like it was just, like I said, it was like super organic. There was no force. So it was just really fun. And it was also really easy for me, because I feel like we were bouncing, you know, ideas back and forth and like beats and verses and stuff. And so working with Jesse made me really be like, shit, I gotta write some stuff. Like, he's super talented. So it was definitely like a really good challenge for me, which was like really nice to, like, you know, have someone to spar with to kind of like keep you sharp.
Yeah, for yeah. Sure.
It was like being like long distance pen pals, you know what I mean? So he'd send me a verse and then be like, I'm going to get you the demo. And then I'd send what I wrote, I'll get you the demo. And we just kept trading back and forth with that. And then we were like, all right, let's hit the studio. But I agree completely with what he was saying. It was like the fun and easy part was because it felt like sparring, you know, but we didn't go into each song with like this concept in mind. We kind of wrote, and whoever got to it first, and we just traded off. I'm going to start this one, you start this one, and just tried to complement each other and make it sound full. And yeah, it was fun. And I think it's reflected in the listening experience too. Hmm. Like the emotions that we were getting out, and a lot of happy, a lot of melancholy, mm-hmm. a lot of bleak, and a lot of like bouncy, you know, mm-hmm. It's a cool, strange time.
Well, the first thing that stood out to me was actually the production. Andrew, I've enjoyed your work as a producer for a while now, going back to Pop 1967, which is when first discovered your music. But your production has also always been soulful, but also seems to have like a bluesy folk bend to it.
Yeah.
On Sleeping Dogs, that to me, that kind of gets pushed to a new level. It sounds influenced by like alt country singer, songwriter, indie yeah. artists. Jesse, I know you're credited as contributing to the production as well. Could you guys talk about the direction that you maybe took when creating the beats?
Yeah. So we were like, should we get beats from other people? You know what I mean? And then we didn't talk too much about each other producing as much as we talked about each other's writing and recording of songs. So I sent him a couple beats and he sent me a couple, and I was like, oh, I really like these. He really liked the ones I had. And we were like, let's just send beats back and forth as well too. And then we would kind of pick songs that we wanted to sample and say, let's try and get this one. And he'd send me one and say, if you want to add some drums to this. So the whole production aspect of it too was just as like a collaborative process as the writing and the recording. So we're kind of from afar producing songs together too. But yeah, I agree. I've always loved the way Andrew produces, and it informed a lot of my like producing that I do now and stuff too. Mm-hmm. And just digging for like that really tight kind of psychedelic slow loop. But yeah, that was a cool part too. And we ended up being kind of like half and half with how many beats we use from each other. And I think that's what we're going to continue to do in the future too.
I remember off the bat, like Jesse had sent me like 3 beats. And the one that I liked the best was the one that he made. Cause he was like, oh yeah, I got this from this person. But then he sent me the like one that he made in there. And I was like, well, I like this one the best anyway.
I slipped it in to see if he would.
Yeah. I just like this one. And then I had sent him some beats. So at that point we were like off the first trade of each other beat wise. It just seemed like, all right, well, we're liking what each other's doing. So, I mean, if we can both do this, we might as well, you know, then I feel like then we could kind of shape the album more the way exactly we want it to turn out. I think with the production too, comes through cool on this record, because as Jesse said earlier, like, I feel like we both have a lot of influences inside and outside of hip hop, but like, we have like a lot of variety in what we listen to. And so like, I'll be way over in left field listening to something super random. So I feel like both of us end up finding maybe like samples and stuff that maybe other people aren't necessarily finding, or maybe like that they don't see what maybe one of us saw, like a part of that, like, oh, like, yeah, this is not like a hip hop song, but like this part, like, you know, if you kind of can pre-sequence this, like you could do something cool with it, and you could add some elements to it to really, like, you know, turn it into that. But so I feel like, you know, where we're maybe drawing from and where we're taking from might be what approach was like maybe a little different, and that's kind of like
a different pool.
A lot of that sound kind of like came through.
Yeah,
I think that's like the secret to that is that we have we both like this the sad slow core, like 90s kind of like droney shoegazy, mm-hmm. I guess in some ways, like that's and I don't think a lot of people are like psyched to go sample like Mazzy Star or something, you know, or something in that realm. They wouldn't think of that, but we're, you know, we were sampling stuff like Elliott Smith and adjacent stuff to that, rather than always digging back to stuff from the 60s and 70s. We're like, what about this? What if we, you know, even modern songs, you know? And
yeah, well, that's the kind of thing I think too, is like I kind of just like went into it with like nothing is off limits type of thing. Like if you can make something cool out of it, like why shouldn't I, you know, like this is dope, like, you know, whatever, like I can work with this, and I can like build and put elements to it and make it to something. Like I'll need to force it to be from one place or whatever, like who cares, like maybe it is like some weird country shit or something, but like whatever, you can add something to it and you can bring something to the table with it, then I don't see why you shouldn't.
I appreciate hearing that approach, because I think sometimes it can be so easy to box yourself in hip hop. Yeah. And being unique is something for me that really matters when I'm listening to a project. So just to, you know, echo the sentiments on production, I really, really enjoyed it because it was different. And I also have, you know, my tastes are sort of all over the map where it concerns music. And so like a lot of this music spoke to me. So I really appreciate it for the production. But also I think the production just really pairs well with what's happening on here lyrically, right? You know, it sort of adds to what's going on emotionally, because you guys are talking about a lot of different subjects on here. And for me, just thinking about this project and how it might have come together, I was wondering how your experience was with each other and the type of conversations you had around creating this album, specifically where it concerns the lyrics. I wondered if you had like intentional conversations about the subjects that you were addressing on here. Were there moments when you share personal experiences with each other when you were making the album?
It's a very good question. I'm excited that you asked it.
It's a great question.
So, I think there's a lot of like unspoken things that happen when you meet like a peer who becomes your friend, who's also an artist. And I think you can tell a lot about somebody through their musical choices. You're like, oh, you like Elliott Smith? Oh, you really like Elliott Smith? You're like, oh, maybe this guy's a little depressed. You know what I mean? Like, so am I, you know? And then, you know, small things like that coming out and just like this love of writing. And then reading his writing. It's like we're reading each other's diaries, essentially. Hmm. So you're learning about the person and putting together this story of who they are in a purely artistic way. And we did have those conversations along the way too. Like I consider Andrew to be a very close friend to me, beyond music, like somebody I trust and, who I think really understands me as a person and understands what mental health is and how it impacts us as artists. And we both have busy lives. We work a lot and we've both been through a lot of shit that we can relate to with each other. And, but I think the coolest part was that kind of diary thing of just being like, wow, oh, okay. Yeah. And then I was feeling more comfortable to be like that. Like I hit him up the other day and I think I was dying laughing. I don't know if you thought it was as funny as I did, but we were working on a song and I was like, man, this shit's kind of dark. Like, can I send you this? You think it's a little too dark? And he's like, go listen to my verse again on it. And I was like, damn, yeah, yours is really dark. I was like, oh, okay, great. So we're cool then, right? You know what I mean? So
yeah, no, it's funny.
Pushes he's like, us.
He's like, damn, like, I don't know. I went kind of dark on that. I'm like, did you listen to what I wrote on it? Like, we're just fucking like both. Yeah, it's like, oh, he's like, oh, yeah, yeah, you're good. You're right. We're good. We're good on that.
So I think another part of that bond is we, kind of whether it's openly or just through action, we do tackle a lot of stuff with like masculinity and, you know, male companionship and sensitivity around things and empathy. A lot of the things that are so devoid, not from music, but from the world. And then when I think you find somebody who is empathetic and understanding and also a cool dude, you're like, we can do this shit together. And you feel like superheroes together, you know, and like you create your whole other part of the world that you can go to. And it's like, this is ours. Sleeping Dogs is ours. Yeah, I think we both get the same things out of hip hop and creating that we share in common. You know, it's a release, and it's something that helps us get through the day. And there's just a deep love for it, you know, and that's, I think that's the biggest thing we share, is we just love doing this shit.
Yeah, 100%. And like, yeah, to reiterate that, I feel like a lot of stuff between us, like when like creating this album, like it like coming to mesh together so well, was really kind of unspoken. Because like Jesse said, like we were like, oh yeah, this is like the demo, or here's what I wrote. And it's like, so you're getting like a glimpse right into it. But I think that's kind of like what put us on the same plane anyway. I feel like the music each other was making was like, I can relate to this. And that's why we kind of like came together in the first place. So then we kind of knew that. And then that's kind of like what, you know, we kind of melded it into one thing with this record. Like Jesse was saying, though, like through this, though, we honestly became like a support system to each other, just because like, obviously, you know, like he said, you know, we're delving into like a lot of feelings and stuff in the music. And like, we both know that, you know, that's an obvious thing in each other's lives. So like outside of music, like, you know, if it was done tomorrow, like, you know, we'd still be there being a support system for each other. And like, it's been like super helpful to kind of like have somebody who knows exactly how you feel with this shit. But yeah, and that's like, and he said, like, that's why we do it, though. It's like, I need to create this stuff to continue to like exist in the world.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of the Sleeping Dogs mission.
Yeah.
Some people have echoed that on Twitter and whatnot, just being like, really getting that out of it, that just like that, all right, you know, like let's one more day type of feeling, you know, with some of those songs. And
yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to get there. It's not something I could write in my early 20s or something. It's like, the older you get, the more excited you get to write about all that shit that you put off or compartmentalize for so long, you know?
Yeah,
Jesse, it's funny you mentioned Twitter, because, you know, in regards to themes, it's interesting to hear you guys say that there wasn't really much discussion about like where you wanted to go necessarily with the songs or with the project as a whole. It sounds like it just sort of came together organically. But on Twitter a couple of weeks ago, I found myself comparing the album to Bruce Springsteen's Darkness on the Edge of Town. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that album, but
I remember seeing that.
The comparison is really just in my mind about like an album for the working class, you know?
Yeah.
It's about folks who are like hard luck, blue collar workers who are being exploited and maybe struggling to find a way out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's also resiliency being expressed on the album, of course, because if it was all that dark stuff, it would be unlistenable to some extent.
Yes, it would.
Yeah, that's why we throw in those like fly lines once in a while, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Talk a little shit.
You're yeah.
Like, you know, you're like, yeah, I'm all fucked up. But then you're like, but I'll still destroy you.
Exactly.
You know, that's kind of, at least that's probably like 90% of my style. And Andrew, too, I think.
Exactly. It's not necessarily the first time the two of you have spoken on these things. You talk about it in your individual work as well. But I'm wondering, in your minds, like, what makes Faking My Death different than your individual work?
It's funny because, like, I didn't even, like, I don't think we approached it in a way for it to be different at all. But then it somehow, like, was completely different. Obviously, there's, you know, there's the similarities, but it feels like something like completely new at the same time. And like, truly, like I said, we didn't set out to do that, but I feel like, you know, it just was like, oh shit. Yeah. So I really don't know how it ended up differing so much, but It really did. And I don't even know where I'm going. I just lost my train of thought.
I know where you were going.
I have no idea. Please help me.
So for me personally, and I bet you'll relate to this too, like with solo work, I feel like I get into like kind of an academic brain when I'm writing. Like I try to write shit that's so dense and like try to get all these like literary themes across. But when I write my solo stuff, there's like a different pressure on too. So you got to write the whole damn song too. Like I got to come up the hook. I got to have two fucking long ass verses, maybe three. So I think it's a little more, and it's all in my head, but like there's a little more constriction, a little more, I try to hone in a little more. And then with the Sleeping Dogs verses, I just feel like I'm like kind of running through a sunflower field in the rain or some shit, like Natasha Bedingfield or whatever. So I think that's it's like loose in its own way, but it doesn't mean that the solo stuff isn't loose in its own way. I feel a little angrier when I'm making solo stuff. Yeah. I feel a little more like open in some ways when I'm making the Sleeping Dogs stuff. I feel like I can like try different things, but the solo stuff, I'm always like writing angry shit after I got out of work in the car, you know, and like trying to bar the fuck out. And so it is weird how it ended up just so different, but it's just fun. Both are fun.
I think a cool thing that when making the record is like having Jesse there doing it with me is that like, I feel like, I don't know. I feel like more like comfortable because like I have somebody, like I have like a partner there with me, you know what I mean? Like it makes it a little easier. I'm not just like standing there by myself. So like the way we were able to like bounce ideas off each other and just I kind of like the sense of community together really made it like a different way of writing. Like as Jesse said, like when you're by yourself, you're just like, you're super focused on like, okay, I have to do all this, like everything's you. But when you have this and like, you know, he'll present me with something, I feel like that's probably a big reason. Whereas like before, you know, solo is just you. And then having that like bounce back and forth just brought it into like a whole nother world that we usually don't have when we're just like in our own mind the whole time.
Yeah, it's like having a coach a lot, like sending each other demos and you're like, yeah, that's dope, I really like what you did here. But it's with every song. And with the solo stuff, you might not show it to anybody for months, you know what I mean? You might bounce it to one person, but a lot of that stuff could just stay in your own head for a long time. So I think getting some like early validation with some of the songs and like pointing out the stuff we liked about it, and that was cool too, because it's always fun to like, okay, he wrote this verse, now I gotta write my verse, what did he say? So I make sure there's like 100 words I can't say, so I don't repeat it, and then vice versa. Like now I just gotta fill in the blanks in some way, like a fucking relay race.
So I just started watching this show on Netflix. I don't know if you heard of it. It's called Beef. I'm not too far.
I watched the first episode.
Okay. So I'm not too far in. I think I'm like in the middle of the second episode, maybe on the third. But without spoiling it at all, there's this scene in the first episode where one of the main characters, she's sitting in her car. She just got into this incident. And so her adrenaline's high. So she's sitting in her car decompressing. And she starts getting all these notifications on her phone all at once, right? All these people are texting her, like various texts from her family, like mother-in-law, her husband, messages from work colleagues, her team asking her to how to handle this particular incident, business partners, a text from a random company reminding her about participating in contests, and it's all just coming in at once. And she sighs and says, make it stop. And I was watching it the same week that I was listening to I'm Faking My Own Death just to get some rest. And it really reminded me of the album, because for me, this project is about navigating the many layers of everyday life and the pressures and demands associated with that, all while trying to squeeze in time for rest and joy and the ability to just be, right?
Yeah.
Which can be so fucking overwhelming. You're trying to find that balance and sometimes it feels impossible. So I was wondering about the process of making this album. Maybe you already answered this. I'm going to ask a question anyway, but I wondered in that process how it fits into the picture that I just described. Did it feel like it sort of straddled both sides of the spectrum, where you were, you know, pressured to put in all this work into this project, or was it just your saving grace?
I would say first off, your analogy with the show is like so completely on point. Like,
that was probably the greatest description of it, because that's really exactly what it is.
Yeah, like that nails it, and that completely.
Can you write that down so I can like quote that?
Screen record it off Spotify. But yeah, that's pretty much it. Like it is exactly like that, and just even hearing that, and that's something I experience every day. Like I work full time. I've been in grad school for 4 years. I have a part-time job as well. I play shows pretty consistently. I go to the studio.
You play shows every day.
Yeah, I play. Well, that's how I knew I was getting. I just played like 2 shows in a row, and I just got sick. And that's how I know I'm getting old. I just got sick, and I was like, "Damn!" And I didn't even do much. I like went to bed fairly early, slept late. Just don't have it like I used to. But then you're just squeezing in these moments, and like, you know, me and Andrew will text back and forth all the time, being like, "Oh man, in two weeks I have a day off." You know what I mean? And as soon as I get that day off, I'm telling him all the time, "I got class tonight, but then after this Sunday, I'm gonna have an hour that I can record." So it's all, but we're looking forward to that all the time. I'm always looking forward to little moments when I get a chance to write or like really sit down and make a beat. And it's hard. It just gets harder. That's the crazy part. It doesn't get any easier. Like, I keep thinking I'm going to get this like big amount of time to really sit down and just be creative for an extended period of time, and something comes up, you know, and like I haven't been able to like really sit and make a beat in like 2 weeks, and it's like all I want to do. And then some days you're like, you get to that day and you're just tired, because you did all the other shit, and then you have a day off, and you're like, "Damn, I gotta clean my room. I gotta go get the cats food. I gotta clean their litter box. I just got like, I kind of want to play video games for a minute. Like, a game's on." But that's what informs the writing too. Like, I always think if I was just like rich and sat at home all day, I would just write bullshit. It would just be so.
Yeah.
I would have nothing to say. Like, all that writing is concentrated of all this like sludge going around in your head for the month. And then you're like, "God, okay, I need to write about this flower and this feeling I had." And you nailed it with that.
Yeah, for sure.
That's pretty much exactly how I feel. Like,
I feel like it was a saving grace, but also like Jesse was saying, like, I feel like because you feel like such weight of all the responsibilities and things you need to do, sometimes you're like, "I know I need to like sit down and write," or "I know I need to like do something," because you need to get it out. But then when you want to go do that, you feel guilty because you're neglecting like the other fucking bullshit that you have to do, that you know you have to do. So it's like, when I could sit down and do it, it was a saving grace. And then sometimes, like, you know, we all have those days where like everything is just the worst, and then so you're having a bad day, so you're thinking like, "Shit, I still gotta like write this verse to the song," and then that's way. So I really think it's all situational, but the album definitely was more a saving grace than like, at no point at all making this did I feel like it was taxing, or like did I feel pressure? I didn't feel pressure. The only time I felt pressure was to try to fucking match this guy when he's like sending me verses. I'm like, "Fuck." That was about it. But that was like the good kind of pressure. You know, I was like, you know, I was really hyped, and it was very inspiring. But yeah, I mean, on those days where we're just like everything's crushing, and then every good thing turns bad because the way your mind's working. But I think overall this album definitely was like super helpful for me to like escape everyday bullshit and kind of get that on the page and kind of like make these demos and like get very excited, because I felt like we were doing something really awesome the whole time. Like, every song we sent back and forth, I'm like, "Man, this album's fucking sick. Like, I'm really, really excited." So knowing we had something, like, I feel like we made a couple songs and I'm like, "All right, I think we were both like, I think we got something here." And then it just like kept going. I feel like that was definitely super helpful to think about when some shit would get you down. So it's definitely helpful.
Yeah, and hearing you both talk about that, I think that's why I found this project so comforting and find it so comforting, because it's my saving grace, because it's affirming. Like, it's affirming my experiences. And sort of like you said earlier, I think it was Jesse that said it about going through and reading each other's diary. I mean, that's what we're doing as listeners, right? It's like, we found your diary, reading it, and we're like, oh, this is like, it's like I'm reading my own diary. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's why, you know, I really just resonated with this project. There's just so many different, you know, lyrics that stood out to me, because, you know, I can relate to them so well. I can relate to the experience because I've been in those scenarios. There's one verse in Fuzzy Orange Headband that really, really stood out to me when I heard it. And I think it's Andrew saying it, and please correct me if I'm wrong on who I'm assigning the lyrics to and if I'm getting them wrong, right? But Andrew says, I'm just waving hi to strangers while I'm holding these hydrangeas, and I'm feeling like some birds singing inside their cages. Some days I want that sweet, sweet euthanasia, because most days the truth, it don't save you none. I'm not feeling like a writer. I'm not feeling like enough. I'm not feeling how I'm feeling because I'm feeling too much. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. That's a setup just to say that you a whole bitch. I'm batting clean up and you're striking out at slow pitch. Die a slow death to all who should oppose this. Green tie curry, so shout the golden fish bar. Drew got them all blue like a crib car. Stay pushing like one half a clip. And you're as basic as some clip art. I'm just waving at the strangers while holding some hydrangeas. And I'm feeling like some birds singing inside the cages. Some days I want that sweet euthanasia, cause most days the truth that don't save you now. I'm not feeling like a writer, I'm not feeling like enough. I'm not feeling how I'm feeling, cause I'm feeling too much. And the thoughts in my head hit the ceiling too much. And this took a quick turn, cause that's just how life does, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that shit's fucked up, right?
Yeah.
Wow, it's, yeah. Yeah.
Like that's how exactly how I felt. I was like, it's crazy because you just don't hear a lot of that in hip hop. Like it's so like it could have been written by like some folk singer in the 60s. You know what I mean? Like, or a poet, an Irish poet or something from the 1890s. It's like he has this kind of like timeless style to his writing, and it's so simple in all the best ways, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's he's not forcing any rhymes and just like it's so him, you know.
Yeah.
And he nails those, like, I'm not feeling like a red because I'm feeling too much, you know what I mean? I can't think that way, and he gets those, like, that repeating idea.
Thank you. I'm glad you like that. Yeah. If you were like, yeah, I can feel this, like, that's just that's awesome. But yeah, it, you know, it's just that balance, like, literally there, you know, it's just, you know, you're trying, but you're just like, you can't get free no matter what. So, but yeah, I'm really glad. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So, like, what do you do when you feel like you can't get free? Like, how do you escape that? Is it through music?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Very much. The writing is really like, I feel like I'm always writing because I'm like always trying to write myself out of a corner or something, like out of a hole of my own brain. And like to do that, I feel like I'm constantly just like creating in my mind all the time, because then I'm like turning it into something positive. Like, you know, I'll be having a bad day, but then I'll write some great, like I'll get something out great about it. And I'll, you know, that kind of like be like, all right, cool. I took this and flipped it on its head. So, you know, try to be winning from that situation. Also, like, yeah, music, and then like skateboarding is another thing for me, where is like very big for me, because it's the same type of deal. It's like therapy. I'm not thinking about anything else for, you know, that amount of time. So, but yeah, like music and that is like, I need to do those things, because it's just like my only way to like be all right.
Rob sort of touched on this already, but when I listened to the project, I got some of the same themes from it, but just talking about this project being sort of centered on the exploited worker, right? And it sounds like, because, you know, that's been both of your experiences, just being in the workforce and doing a million different jobs. And I really felt that in Pigeon when I heard the lyrics. I think I'm on the verge, well, the chorus, I think I'm on the verge of a brain aneurysm accompanied by a heart attack and loss of vision. Despite all that, I'll be the first to cross the ribbon, but they're still bound to treat me like a pigeon. I don't know if this is where you all were going with this, but when I heard it, I thought a lot about organizational structures, specifically the employees that fall at the bottom of these imagined hierarchies, right? So most of the times these folks are frontline staff. They're the pigeons of the company, even though their efforts are the reason the business thrive and survive. And so these are the employees that are showing up. They're putting in the work through sickness, shitty working conditions, and the stressors of life outside the workplace. And I've been in that position so many times. I've managed teams that work on the front line, and it's hard fucking work. And they're most of the time the most dedicated employees in an organization. Yeah. I don't know if that's where you were going with this. I don't know if it resonates with you or not, but looking at these lyrics through that context, I wondered if you all ever felt this way as independent artists, considering the structure of the music business.
That's great. You're always right on point. So I was just waiting to say, like, yes, and also in the music industry. And I think another like big element of this project was that Andrew and I, you know, we've been doing this for a long time. It's, you know, we're not like some young guns in the scene. So I think that it attributes to both things, like definitely work, but also like, you know, we put in just as much work as everybody who's getting seen and being heard and everything. And at this point when we were making it, you know, nobody was really talking much about us, and we thought each other we were gassing each other up and being like, no man, you're dope, like why can't we do this shit too? So I think that was like a kind of like solemn chip on the shoulder the whole project too, of being like, let's show everybody that we can rap, we can write, we can produce, we can sing. So and regardless if we don't get out of whatever tier or wherever we're at in the game, we're still going to be doing it no matter what, and we're still going to win in our own right, you know. And so I think that's a really, really good point, is connecting that to being, you know, independent artists. And like, you know, some people dig it, some don't, but I think we both pretty pleasantly surprised with how much people really connected to this. And it's of course what we wanted, but to see it actually manifest and people like feel attached to this and feel comforted by it, is that's the win, you know. Like that's fuck everything else. Like that's when I see somebody be like, I walked around listening to this today, and that's the shit. I see that on Twitter, I'm like so happy. You know.
For real, like, yeah, it's cool that people are like buying the album, but the fact that people are like constantly talking about the album because they're like, I can't stop listening to this, or like, I can really relate to this. And the fact that people are just like, you know, pulling quotes and are super like, can feel like they can connect to the record and like relate to it is, I mean, like Jesse said, that's all that I want at the end of the day. Like, I'm not going to make $1 million. I don't fucking care. Like, we need to do this shit regardless. So the fact that, you know, like other people can relate and maybe it can help them to feel like, you know, because you don't know what people's support system is. Like, some people's only support system could be this, you know what I mean? Like, they might not have anybody that they can talk to this shit about. You don't know what people are going through. So like, knowing that like maybe this thing is the only thing that can comfort somebody is like, that's like huge to me.
I'm Faking My Own Death Just to Get Some Rest starts off with Stardogs. For me, it sets the tone for the rest of the album. In the first few bars, Andrew, you rhyme, this ain't no beginner shit. It centers on a sinking boat. That feels both like an educational piece for listeners considering the project's content, but also a declaration that lets folks know where you're at. How are you all left feeling by the end of the album? And where do you hope listeners will be? Does it still feel like the boat is sinking?
I feel like I'm living on a perpetually sinking boat. That's just like what I have my chin above the water. But I mean, honestly, I feel like there's a lot of that like sinking ship energy mixed with like a hopeful type of thing as well. That's just kind of like, you know, like a good balance between the two, you know. And I feel like it's kind of declaring that, just to be like, all right, just because we're sinking doesn't mean we can't turn it around type of vibe. Like, we bring you to the lows, but it's like, all right, that's not the last coffin nail ever. We're still there. So it's especially a declaration, like you said, it's like the first couple bars. So I don't know, I feel like the whole album will put you on a roller coaster, like, especially, and then you kind of like end back in the smooth beginning with whoa.
I think it's funny too, because between our writing styles, like, I'm a very like scatterbrain, like ADHD writer to the max, and I've kind of always been that way, so I'll like leap around from like reference to reference and then start and then like chill out and then be like, whoa, movie, song, TV show, basketball player, and then start being like, and you know, all this other shit going on in my life, and that's just like Walt Frazier, who played for the Knicks, and you know what I mean. So like, it's and Andrew's always kind of like, I started, there's definitely points in my, you know, artist career where I was like, is that like not right, like to write this sort of kind of completely non-linear, kind of spaced out, like, what is this guy really talking about? And then Andrew was just like, that's dope, like, this is so cool. And then I had, you know, even Curly Castro, we were talking the last time we were hanging out, I was like talking about like conceptual rappers, and I was like, man, I'll never be a conceptual rapper, I don't know how to do that. And he's like, you already are one. And I was like, wait, are you sure? And then so like hearing from guys I admire, like Andrew and Castro and Prem and the guys in my camp at Strange, and it's like, the more that's affirmed and validated, you know, it's like, now I'm just like, I'm all in on that, and I feel so confident in myself, because that's what I wanted to do and that's who I am. So I love that so much of Sleeping Dogs is Andrew and I just writing exactly how we want to, not trying to fill any template, just saying whatever the fuck kind of comes to mind.
Which goes back to the like, nothing's off limits type of attitude with the whole record, be it samples or, you know, producing or writing. We're kind of just taking it wherever we're feeling at the moment and then kind of shaping it into something.
What a great way to wrap this segment, going out on a high note. All right, but let's change gears a little bit and let's talk about Cameron and Purple Haze. Let's go.
I get the boosters boosting, I get computers puting. Y'all get shot at, call me, I do the shooting. I do the recruiting, I tutor the students. I nurture they brain, I'm moving the movement. Whether Buddhist or Buddha, that's Judas or Judah. I got Luger to Ruger, hit from Ruda to Tudor. Chick from Huda to Huda, I put two in producers. I'm the real ball story, the loser of Hoosiers. I rock mostly dosey, I roll mostly doly. I leave you holy, holy. You'll say holy moly. Here come the core and the killer. Play roly poly. I tell you true stories. High coley holy. When it's repping time, I get on extra grind. Fried the fricassee, pepper seed to Pepperdine. Jeff Hamilton, Genesis, Levitime. Bitches say I'm the man, I tell them never mind.
First question is a broad, general question, and that is, why this album? Why are we talking about this album?
Zilla, you know, hit us up and was like, what album do you guys want to do? And Andrew and I were like, I don't know, like, what do you think we should do? Like, is it have to be hip hop? Can it be anything? And then we kind of bounced. We were like, oh, maybe we can ask if we do Elliot Smith or something. And then Zilla brought up Cameron and Purple Haze.
Well, he said like, he's like, Diplomatic Immunity. I was like, I was going to say Purple Haze, but.
Yeah, so we're both big. Me and Andrew both love Dipset, and definitely both love Cameron. And I think I think Zilla agrees too that Andrew has some kind of like strange similarities with Cameron's writing. So yeah, and there's some bangers on that. And I think at least when I was growing up, that was like getting that on CD. I remember where I was when I got it. I remember where I listened to it. I remember how I wanted to dress differently. I remember just feeling like way cooler when I was listening to that album. So I was like, nobody in my class is listening to Purple Haze right now. So I know I'm the only one who has this in my Walkman. And I remember walking into eighth grade with the Carmelo Anthony jersey on, Carmelo Anthony shoes, and Carmelo Anthony sweatpants, and a baby blue wristband. And I was listening to Down and Out by Cameron walking into school. And I was like, yes. I run this motherfucker now. And then proceeded to not talk to anybody.
Yeah. And he never looked back.
Yeah. But that I was, yeah, I was just like, I was blown away by even hearing it as a kid, you know.
I don't know. It's an album I've literally been listening to for 20 years, like almost. You know what I mean? It came out in 04. Like, I feel like it was super influential to me. Just kind of like it was something completely different. I remember, like, you know, growing up and like early stuff, like listening to like Nas and Wu-Tang and that kind of writing, you know, like that is like a lot different than what Cam'ron's doing. Like it was completely, it brought like a new element to me. So like, I remember when Come Home With Me came out and like, that was like fucking, you know, that was super dope. But then when Purple Haze came out, I feel like to me, like, it was like open my eyes to kind of like a different way to like approach things. Because at this point, like, I've been writing my whole life, not necessarily like raps, or I was just always a writer no matter what. Like, I kept diaries and journals when I was young, when I always had bands and shit growing up. And like, even if I wasn't the singer or whatever, I was always the one writing shit. So I was already doing a lot of writing. And then when I, you know, heard like, when I started listening to hip hop more, when I was, you know, like when I first heard like Wu-Tang, and then starting to, you know, kind of like get taking my hand in that way, it was like one way. But then when I heard Cam'ron, I feel like it was like a glimpse, like it was just like something opened up in me, because I feel like Cam'ron shit is like, it has like a really cool simplicity to it, but there's like still something very artful about the simplicity of it. And then also, like, a huge thing about me is like, I feel like Cam'ron was always like really funny, and like he had like a way of integrating humor into like all of his shit, which like I love so much. And like, I feel like I lean into that in a lot of stuff that I do. Obviously mine's more of maybe the dark humor variety, but I feel like when I was listening to Cam'ron, I was always super hyped. I was like very happy, in a good mood, and like, and just like, I was find myself laughing and shit, because he would just say bars that were so ridiculous that like, I feel like it was so influential to me, especially at that time in my life and writing, that like, that's why this album is like really special to me personally.
Well, I feel like I have to be honest with you guys. You picked this album. I said to E, I gotta be honest, I'm not really even sure I like Cam'ron or I like this album. I don't understand it. I never have.
That's great.
And so I felt like I needed help, and I reached out to Gang PTP, King Vision Ultra, and I was like, please help me. Like, I know he's into Dipset. It's almost feels like a specialty of his. And I was like, help me understand.
Dipset studies.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think what he's helped me see in part is how Dipset in general, you know, represent a very specific regional wave. Of course, Harlem and Manhattan being the region. And I'm wondering if you connected with that in some way, or was it more of an admiration you have for sort of this wave as outsiders?
For me, yeah, it was like an East Coast thing. And I'd say a ton of it was aesthetics. Like, I had like older cousins who had like Dipset earrings, were wearing the jerseys backwards, like super into Max B. And it was the Dat Piff era too. So like, they were getting like all the Dipset adjacent artists sent in the mail on CD. So that's like all we would listen to. They had the what was the movie? It was like a DVD movie we used to watch. So it was just like fly, kind of, you know. And I was listening to a lot of like Gangstar, Aesop Rock, Doom, Atmosphere, Far Side, and stuff that I was like really connecting to and loving. And then this Dipset, like listening to that was like, yeah, I was hyped. And I was like playing basketball, going to basketball games, listening to Killa Cam and shit. And I was just like, it's weird. It's cool. It's like, has a whole different energy to it. But I think a lot of it was that like the headbands and NBA jerseys on, and just like crazy beat choices, and like the whole like marketing of it was very alluring as well.
Yeah, like the production, like all the Heatmakers production on it. Like, I don't know. Like I said, it came to me in like a very influential time in like my life and writing, as you know, as far as that goes. And like I said, like, I was so used to like Jesse, like, you know, I was listening to like Wu-Tang, Nas, fucking like like Gangstar, fucking shit like that. And then like I feel like this was just so different than all that, and it was just kind of like really cool to see something else. Like, it just kind of opened my mind to being like, okay, like there's a lot of different ways to do this. Like it really, I think that's kind of is what did it for me, is it just kind of like was a gateway to just kind of like explore other ways to do shit. And Cameron's really fucking funny.
Very, still funny, even when he's not trying to be.
That's what I mean. It's just like, I don't know. I like I said, like, you know, a lot of like the content like that I'm putting out there is like, you know, deeper, whatever, fucking, you know, normal shit. But like when I'm listening to Cameron, like I'm genuinely happy and having a good time. And like he can provide me with that and I fucking need it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what Dipset was for me. I mean, you couldn't go out to the bar in college when I went to college without hearing a Dipset song. Cause it like set the tone, set the vibe, right? Like you Friday night, you're at the bar and like they're playing Dipset. But I don't think I realized, and probably wouldn't have been able to realize it in the time, obviously, but how iconic they were in different ways, like specifically for New York folks, like not just the music, but also the fashion. Like I look at there's pictures of them in the Contact High book, and I look at these pictures and I'm like, man, they really did represent like an era in hip hop. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, I mean, you're saying it, Andrew, and I think you said it too, Jesse, but like, that's what really drew people in. Like it was this whole aesthetic, you know, and aside from like the music. Yeah, I appreciated that later. And you know when I really, really realized it? When they did that Versus with the Lox. Yeah. And like hear it, and like listen to the crowd respond to it, and like hearing people go like recite. And I was like, man, this really was a time for folks, especially people in New York.
It really, like, it wasn't even rap. It was straight up a movement. Like they were tied it all up, and like that was pretty cool to see. You know, like there was dudes that could spit for sure, but like they literally just came and just brought like a whole package was there. Like they really were doing everything, which was kind of like just really cool to see. And like, you know, like Jesse said, like East Coast, so it's like, you know, pride for like East Coast rap is just doing something fucking completely crazy. And like I loved all Cameron's style. Like I fucking had big ass square earrings that I fucking wore and and high school shit. Yeah. After that, like I swear to God, like I've been wearing camo suits for 20 years now, and I've been trying to get these like all chocolate Air Force Ones. So like In Harlem Streets on that album is my favorite song. And he says like, and the army suit's cute with my chocolate Airs. And I literally been trying to have that outfit for 20 years now. So I look on eBay because they have the one Air Force Ones that are brown, but they have the white sole with the white check. And I want an all brown pair.
No, I need all brown. I'm
still striving for that outfit to this day at 36.
Yeah, that was like, that's when I started getting really into sneakers, was around that. Before that, I was like, I don't know, whatever my mom's going to get me for school. And then I was like, no, I need like 10 pairs. And I'm still like that. I'm still like a ridiculous sneakerhead. Like I barely go on social media because I'm just on like sneaker apps, like saving, you know, just like maybe I can get that
one. Making that list, right? A couple weeks. Yeah.
And then I get them and I don't wear them for 3 years.
Yeah, that's me.
Just wear my beaters out. You know.
I'm literally selling sneakers right now on eBay because I'm like, I'm not wearing this shit. Like I need
to sell them.
And then
I pull them off and I'm like, I'll just have those so I can look at them.
Now after 3 years of trying to tell myself that I will wear these sneakers, I am now 3 years later convincing myself to sell them until 1 hour into the sale, I'm going to stop it and be like, oh, you know, I'll wear them. Like, put them back in the closet for another 3 years. Fuck it.
My whole bedroom is just
have a nice day.
Littered with it.
Have a nice day. It's inverse. Yeah, have a nice day Air Maxes. We got the pine green dunks.
Pine greens.
We got the old bread. These are all.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
But yo, wear your sneakers. Wear your sneakers. Paying for them, wear them.
Yes,
exactly. I wear them all the time now. But yeah, that's part of that too was like that was Yo, part of that. I wanted all the coolest shit, but I'm also like I just wear like a white t-shirt every day. I don't wear any cool shirts.
I didn't think about this
every day. Pretty much, I wear a white tee
of Dipset, but that makes a lot of sense.
Just like because everything was so visual and aesthetic, and it was like fashion on top of like. They were just doing it all, which was just like I said, it like kind of opened my eyes up to a whole nother. I feel like it was just influential to me in a lot of ways, especially when it came out and like how old I was. I like was just getting my license and shit and like fucking driving around listening to that, blowing my speakers out. Like, I don't know. It was definitely just like that time I was in and like when it hit me and just like how it showed me something else.
For sure.
You know, like not everything's for everyone. Like Rob, you were like, I don't know if I like Cameron. Like, and that, you know, it is what it is. And it's all like kind of where it finds you in your life too. I feel like that's why some records are so important to people over some other records. And it's like all because of like what it meant to you in that time, you know? So just for me, that record is like very influential. So
yeah, for sure.
I get
I remember visiting my buddy in New York like 6 or 7 years ago, and like we like went to embrace each other, and Dipset Anthem came on in the bar, and like people were like standing on tables, like everybody knew every single word. Like we were like, oh my God, this bar is playing Dipset Anthem. And I was just like, yeah, like it's this like crazy nostalgia, like sugar rush you get when you hear that.
Yeah.
And there's some iconic lines too. Like they're not like the most like profound. It's not the most profound writing, but they stay with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, today's a new day. Got the boule up in the suitcase. And you're just, you never forget. It just imprints on your brain.
In my attempt to understand Cameron and Dipset the last couple of weeks, one of the things that kind of stood out to me as far as lyricism go, is the way that Cam will like take one word and use it like 3 or 4 different ways in the same bar or in the same verse. And
that's some Andrew shit.
So that like stood out to me, and that's kind of drawn me in a little bit more than maybe before. But I wanted to ask you guys, I mean, it sounds like this has stood out to you as well, but what are things about his lyricism in general that like set him apart from other artists? Is it just his humor or is it more than that?
I would say what I like about it, it's definitely humor. I love like a good like super fly bar, you know, like ice like Winnipeg. You could say I'm friends with Fred, you know, like just shit like that. Like I love the fly bars. You're a stewardess, good mom. I fly too, you know, like
yeah, it's just
that
like,
shit just gets me.
I feel like there's some shit that he says that like anybody else would say, and they'd be like, damn, that shit was corny. But like, so Cameron will say it, and I'm like, that was great. I don't know what it is. There's something about him. Like, I think it's just like his unbridled, like confidence in himself. Like he'll say some shit and it'll be like, if anyone said it, I'd be like, but he just says it with so much like, yeah, I fucking know. Like that it just, he can say whatever. Like he fucking makes words up and shit. And like some of the stuff that he says is like, I don't even know what just happened, but it was fucking awesome. Like there's just something about like, I really think like, you know, the word, you know, not throwing it around, but like the dude had like a swagger to him that like, he just kind of like was doing it and he was like 100% behind it. And like, honestly, man, it's hard to really get behind yourself sometimes and to deliver something and just to be completely like confident. That dude has like 150% confidence in himself.
I don't ever remember hearing anybody like question him like as an MC.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like 100%. Publicly.
And some of the shit that he says, if someone else said it, people would literally be like on the internet, fucking just like
tearing their ass up. Yeah.
But Cameron would say some shit and you'd be like, oh, okay, word, that's what's up.
That's Cam, yeah.
Yeah, it was, there's something about it. Like, he just like was, he put a spell over you sometimes. Like, I feel like when you're listening to him, like everything, you're just like, oh yeah, cool, that hits for me.
Yeah. And he wrote like a lot of puns too. Like a lot of his like, kind of like somewhat cheesy, corny fly lines were like puns.
Yeah, 100%.
And then that over, like, you know, thinking specifically with Purple Haze, like Killer Cam, that like that, dun, 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 like, and he has a very distinctive voice. And like, for me, like as somebody who's like a super, you know, basketball junkie to the max, like anything that's like somewhat adjacent to basketball, I feel like Cam makes like basketball music in some ways too, because he used to play ball all and everything. Yeah, he was and fucking... he's got some good ball references. And yeah, it's like I try to think of like what the comparison is for somebody's like, it's classic with like a classic rock band or some shit, you know, but I'd butcher it, so I'm not even gonna try to. But it's one of those you come back to when you're like, spring day, it's 68 degrees out, warm enough, and you put on some Cam and you just feel like the shit, you know.
It's funny you mentioned Killer Cam, because it was a verse on Killer Cam that kind of opened things up for me as far as lyricism goes, that I was just like, okay, I kind of get it. Yo, I'm from where Nicky Barnes got rich as fuck. Rich and A hit the kitchens, then we're pitching up. Rob Bass, Mace, Dougie Fresh switched it up. I do both, who am I to fuck tradition up? So I parked in a tollway zone, chrome. I don't care, that car throwaway home. Welcome to Harlem, where you welcome the problems. Off a furlough, fella, felons get partners. Them niggas knew we bang, stood out like booty tang. Soon as a stoolie sang, that's when the toolie sang. Bang, bang, came from that mooly ring. Snap, crack, jewelry bling, flapjack, coolie bring. Clack, clack, coolie ring, bad rap, cuties cling. Ass cap, put them in the river, I'm the sushi king. And I'ma keep you fresh, like the fish eat your flesh. Yes, sir, please confess, just say he's the best. Sing. Yeah, yeah. He's got a lot of quotables. Yeah, yeah, for sure. And he's using, like, I might be repeating myself, but just the way he uses like specific sounds and ties them in to words that, kind of like you're saying, Andrew, like, I don't know any other rapper that might use ring ring or sing sing or whatever on a song and make it sound dope. But he's using these sounds in a way that ties things together that I kind of understand after listening.
Yeah, he uses like onomatopoeia and shit. Like, it's like, what's going on?
What is it, though, about Purple Haze that makes it stand out from other Cam'ron projects?
I'd go back even to the aesthetic, like the presentation of it. I mean, like some of the Kanye production on it. Was it a whole thing? Was the whole thing produced by Kanye?
No, just a few joints, I know,
Down and Out. But yeah, it felt like kind of the most complete album, at least in my opinion, from Cam'ron. And then just like a few of those songs were just absolute hits, you know, between like Down and Out, Killer Cam, Dipset Symphony. Is it? No, Dipset Forever.
Dipset Forever is just like one of the flags. Like,
that might be my favorite.
So
Get I, Down. That's all that shit.
Get Down's down, the yeah. joint. Yeah. For me, like I said, the time that it hit me, but I think also, sorry if I'm yelling. Am I yelling?
No,
you're good, man.
I just like heard my mom like, damn, I've been yelling this whole time.
Cam just gets you hype.
Seriously. But I think to me, it was the most, I think Cam'ron finally came into his own as like the final level boss Cam'ron on Purple Haze. I know like the first two records that he did, he was kind of like handcuffed to make like certain kinds of songs for like the label type shit. And then when he signed with Jay-Z and did Come Home With Me, I feel like he was like kind of building up to him, his like true self. But then when I think he got to Purple Haze, I think that's like final level boss Cam'ron. I feel like he fully like morphed into himself there. And I feel like what you're getting is like 100% unadulterated Cam'ron on that record. Like, you saw sprinkles of it in Come Home With Me, which is another great record, which I fucking love. But I feel like Purple Haze is just over the top, like in all aspects. And I feel like it's just 100% Cam'ron.
I'm just realizing, Jesse, you refer to Purple Haze on Stardogs, right?
Yes.
When you wrote that, were you thinking about Cam'ron or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I forget the line, was it pen and pad, keep a dock away, sparking purple haze like we in Osaka Bay. That's from Down and Out, right? That's from Down and Out. at one point. He goes, "Oh, drinking sake on a Suzuki."
Psycho Dave.
Yeah. So yeah, it was a direct reference to the song of Purple Haze. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Perfect album choice, then, right?
Yeah.
It all ties back together, man.
It's a simulation.
People don't realize it at first.
What about production on this album? To me, like, representative of a very specific time, a very specific sound. Like, has it aged well? Like, what do you guys think of it today?
I think it's still pretty fire.
Yeah,
and most of it.
When I think of that time, I think of like Heat Makers. I think of like Dipset, like Diplomatic Immunity shit. Like, I feel like that whole era to me is just like Heat Makers beats. And I don't know. Like, I guess I still like it today in the way of like when I listen to it, I'm still like hyped. If someone was like dropping some shit on a Heat Makers beat right now,
yeah,
would I feel the same about it? Like, I don't know. I feel like I'd be like, nah, like this is like specifically for Dipset. Like, you can't use this. You know, if it was like a new Cam'ron album with like some production like this, I guess maybe I'd be like, okay. But I don't know how I would feel about it, like if anyone else were to jump in there.
Mm-hmm. But I'd be amped if I got a beat like Killer Cam. Well, but that's crazy. That's a lot of like what he did on that. It's like I don't know how I would approach that beat.
Yeah.
You know, like the dull 808 underneath it. Like, yeah, I think a lot of it has held up production wise, but I agree with Andrew. Like, I haven't heard a whole lot like that since.
And
you know, a lot of those types of beats.
Yeah. And like, that's like a funny thing to say though, because honestly, like, I just keep it in that time. You know what I mean? It just lives in a capsule for me. You know what I mean? It lives there. So like, you know, to like hear someone approach it today, I don't know. Like, I guess I'd have to see, but, like we were saying, like it kind of just like it's so of that time in that era, like that whole Dipset thing was like a capsule. It was like just a whole thing in itself. And that was like one piece of that like Dipset like whole world that we were living in.
So then do you think it's nostalgia then that keeps you engaged?
Honestly, it could be, you know, it's like I never thought about it like that, you know, because I guess like we're not hearing those kind of beats these days, you know what I'm saying? So when I listen to that stuff, like I'm in that time, you know, I don't even think about it in relation to like now. But that's why I kind of want to now hear someone put out like a Heat Makers song. That'd be cool.
I want to hear somebody put out something like when Still Tippin' drops.
Yeah.
That shit would be crazy. That like trio, Houston, like fucking Paul Wall coming in.
Ooh,
cleanup hitter at the end. Even Slim Thug, like all them just fucking.
Ooh, dude, Slim Thug was my fucking boy, dude. I miss him.
Yeah.
Slim Thug could rap his ass off, man.
Fire.
I'm thinking about the nostalgia, and I think the next time I listen to something from a former era, from a past era, I'm going to ask myself if I really, really like this, or if it's because it has some sort of nostalgia to it, because that's like an interesting.
Yeah, I try not to do that. If because I do that a lot. I listen to so much older shit, and I'm like,
so do I.
I really still like this, or like, but most of the time I do. I find
it's hard though, because it's like it ties into such specific parts of your life that it's like so meaningful, no matter what. That like, you don't know why you enjoy it, but if you do, it's, you know, probably for a good reason, because it was probably something good going on at that point. So I think like just for that alone makes it like worthy to listen to.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that's part of my problem with Cam'ron and Dipset in general is like, I was not really listening to much rap music at this time. Like I kind of took a break.
Yeah.
And so I don't have any nostalgia attached to it, which is why when I go back and listen to it now, I'm like, ooh, really? I don't know.
Yeah, you're like, whatever.
That's what I said, you know, it's like, it just all like links into why it makes sense for you. You know what I mean? Just like I'm sure that there's some records for you that, you know, like we might've completely missed that are like so important to you, but I am thankful you went back and listened to it and like, at least, you know, gave it a fair go.
Oh, for sure. That's one of the things I like about doing this show is like inevitably someone picks an album like this that I'm not super familiar with. And it like challenges me in a way that I appreciate. So
for sure.
That's a fun way to listen to music too.
No, that is really cool. That's dope.
I saw an article written about Purple Haze, and in the article, it seemed like a bold statement to me, but it said that Cam'ron revolutionized rap with this album. In this conversation, I think you can make that argument about hip hop, like, and the contributions like this crew made. But I wonder how you all feel about that statement.
Revolutionized rap. I mean, that's
it's a big statement to
that's
make.
A big fucking statement. I fucking love this record. I fucking love it, but come on.
I think they were using a lot of the arguments that we were talking about. So maybe they meant more so hip hop, but they said rap. But I'm thinking the cultural impact is bigger.
Oh, for sure.
I would say like Cam'ron as a larger part of Dipset as a whole entity. I would say like without a doubt,
yes,
revolutionized facets of hip hop. You know,
yes, I would agree with that. Yes, so maybe that's what they meant. But I saw that and I was like, wow.
That seems like something that would need to be in like a whole paragraph explaining what exactly would mean by saying that statement. You know what I mean? I feel like that's a tough pull quote. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. For sure. I think we need to dig a little deeper on that one.
Yeah.
I think the wording was wrong, and I think they were trying to. It's the bigger picture. Yeah.
At that time, I think like Dipset like owned the world in that kind of like realm.
Yeah.
They really were doing something different. And like culturally, I think that it was definitely like very big. So in ways, but you know, then again.
Sometimes people get a little carried away and say things just to sensationalize. You know, my comparison, me comparing your album to Darkness on the Edge of Town might just be lazy and in a way that
I loved it.
I love it. It's great.
Might just be lazy though in a way that this person's saying Cam'ron revolutionized rap.
I think you were a genius with that.
I mean you saying that is funny because like on the surface level, like comparing it to Bruce Springsteen, people would just be like, you know, like, oh, what the fuck's this guy talking about?
Yeah, I can feel people's eyes rolling as I say
for sure. But then you say why, and then it makes sense. You know
it's
what I mean?
It's opening up a larger conversation by saying something like that. And that's like the cool part of it. That's because that's right where my head went to. I was like, okay, he's talking about that kind of like worker music. And, you know, you could have went with like, this is some Pete Seeger music, you know, and I agree.
Mm-hmm. People are also really sensitive. And I think that they like would see something like that and be like, think that you're comparing Sleeping Dogs to Bruce Springsteen, which like you're not set right. So I think people are also really like
There's not many things you could compare it to that I would be offended by, you know. I all of it I'm like, yeah, I could see that, yeah, I could see that, yeah.
There's a lot of things going on there, so that's fair.
Sleeping Dogs revolutionized rap music.
Yes, there you go. There's the true statement.
That's going on my Twitter now.
Rob said it.
Oh boy.
Rob said it.
Take it up with him.
Yeah, go ahead. Quote me.
Let's get some beef going. Right.
Sleeping Dogs, greatest rap group ever?
Yeah.
Let's start the argument.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No such thing as bad press. Guys, this has been great. Thanks so much for taking the time and talking about the album, talking about your work, talking about Cam'ron. As I've said, I've grown a deeper appreciation for Purple Haze, so I'm grateful for that.
We're gonna see what rocking the fur coat soon enough, Rob.
Exactly. Yes.
Pink razor cell phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Before we let you go, what do you want folks to know about where to find the music, where to find the physicals, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, we Bandcamp, Spotify. I have some CDs left already. I think you have some too, right, Andrew? Perhaps. Yeah. So we got some CDs on hand. Ship out to people if they want them, but we're online on the streaming stuff, and we already started working on some new shit, and I think next we're gonna try and work on doing like one big show to go through the album with, and a live show somewhere this summer.
Pistol Bandcamp is where there's like some CDs. We sold out of the tapes like really quick, which was cool to see, kind of surprising, but we sold out of those quick. And then we got CDs as well. We actually, like, on Bandcamp Friday, we dropped, like, a shirt of illustrated lyric I did for one of Jesse's. I think my favorite verse is probably on Whoa, Whoa, Whoa. And I illustrated kind of like the walkout of his verse on that, which was like northbound train drawing smiley faces in the window and it go. And it's just like a train. It's actually a, it is a fucking T train, Jesse.
It is.
The T.
My man.
And I, it's just like a
smiley. That Philly shit. No, I'm just kidding. I love Philly.
So, but yeah, so we did that on Bandcamp Friday. So there is some merch. I mean, we did like a limited run of shirts. So they're up there. They're all on $3 pistol through Zilla. Shout out him. And then, yeah, so obviously on all the streamings, like Jesse said, we're already deep into the next record and we're taking it even further places.
Nice. Before we go, I do think we need to congratulate Jesse on his Call Out Culture Fantasy Basketball Championship. That was you, right? That won.
Were you in that league?
Both E and I are in that league.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit.
Get the fuck out of here. That's crazy because I didn't really know like who was in it besides Zilla and Griff. And maybe that's it. And I was just like, I never figured it out. I never used Yahoo.
Yeah.
Wow. Now I have more people to recognize what I did with that season.
Dano's in that league too, right?
I think Dano is. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, I was trying to be humble, but now's my time. Right now is my time to shine.
Jesse also won best like hip hop artist in Rhode Island Music Awards too.
Oh shit.
Oh wow. Congrats.
That comes second to the fantasy basketball championships.
Well, congratulations on all fronts.
Good job, Jesse.
All right, guys. Well, thanks again. Really appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Really appreciate
it. Thank you.
Thanks for all your questions, guys. They're great.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Y'all are great. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you all when the Sixers Celtics series is over.
Yeah, for sure.
That's right.
All right, folks. This has been The Next Movement. Thanks for listening. Peace.
Peace.
I'm faking my own death just to get some rest. Just to get some rest. I'm faking my own death just to get some rest. I'm faking my own death just to get some rest. Hey.
Before I fall asleep, I think of a bar. Carve it in the sheep's wool, tallying my lucky stars. It's hard to keep on, the paperwork piling. Gaslight shining, old cycles start chiming in. So I'ma try again, 10 toes down, deep breath. New day, blow the endo out. Level headed, but the dread get loud. So I let the record deck drown the sounds out. Down, but I'll rise again. Steady water in the flower pot. Peppers on the countertop. Chop them like a soul sample. Love bigger than the Cadillac. 22s like the old banner jam. Work the words on my shoes when I hoop. Back in the day when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore. I reminisce though. Mission in the rain, weeping willow. Northbound train. Drawing smiley faces in the window. And then go.
Faking my own death. Just to get some.